I'm Karen Florin, and this is the Storyline Podcast. Today, I have the honor and the privilege to be here with Mr. Lonnie Braxton II, who is retiring at the end of the month after almost 30 years as a prosecutor in the state courts. There is so much more to Mr. Braxton than his career, and we'd like to cover a little bit of that today. First, though, I think he has a message for you. Welcome, Mr. Braxton, and what would you like to say today?
I would like to say thanks, and thanks to the people of New London for the privilege of serving them as one of the assistant state's attorneys. It's been an honor, and it's been a privilege.
Your focus has often been on young people, and there's a lesson I know that you like to teach them about how are they going to pay the bills. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Well, you know, I worked in adult court for years, and you know, I watched a lot of things happen as people came through there. And so I always like kids. So you know, people think things are magic. So often I even till this day, have parents in. And the question I like to ask is, how much is rent? And usually people say, $200. And my response to that is, you can't park your car for $200 a month. So we usually lay out the rent around here is about $1,200. You're making $10 an hour? That's not any money. That's $400 for the week, $1,600 for the month. Take out your FICA and all those other things. You got about $1,350, maybe $1,400. You pay your rent. It's magic if you want cell phone, you want the internet, you want your nails done, you want the latest pair of sneakers, you want the heat on, you want a little food. It really costs about $3,500 a month for a person to live here. So if you're making $10 an hour, that's three $10 an hour jobs. When would you sleep? So often the parents are amazed too when we break this down like that. And I remind the parents, your real job is to make sure your kids are empowered.
So really there is no financial literacy or very little financial literacy. And why isn't this, by the way, we're digressing, but why isn't this taught in schools?
Well, you know, we can say why are a lot of things not taught in schools, but schools now are required to do so much more than they were in the past, with less time and resources to do it. That's not making an excuse for schools, but remember, well, a couple of people said when I was in school I had an abacus, but I'm not that old, but close. Okay. But how many people had computers 30, 40 years ago? You know? And we thought that school was too long. If I had my way, school would open at 7 and close at 7. And the reason is that when you have two parents now having to work, the kid gets out of school at 2:30, 3 o'clock, comes home to an empty house. Who watches your kid? Jerry Springer? The cell phone? The internet? How about having the school open so that kid can get his or her homework done, have some activities there, and at 6 or 7 be allowed to go home when a parent's there?
That's probably not very popular with the kids,
no.
12 hours of school.
No, but they are doing 12 hours in school, except part of those hours are not the school we'd like for them to be in.
I understand, and you see the consequences of a lot of bad decisions and perhaps bad parenting in the juvenile court every day.
Well, we have now about three generations of people who've had to work. And it started in cities as cities started to collapse, and now that has crept to suburbia. And when we've done that, what we have now are people who are being asked to teach their children things they don't know. You cannot teach your kids things you don't know. And again, it's not an excuse, but if you're so busy trying to eke out a living, you didn't get a chance to be taught certain things by your parents, and you let two, three generations go on, a lot's lost. You know, a good example of that right now, the complaint about people not wanting to work. You can't find people to fill a job. Really, I'm not surprised by that. Because if you look at the average age of a tool and die maker in America today, it's 70 years old. So what we've done is we've allowed people such as myself, who have kind of like stayed too long, instead of retiring at 55 or 60, 65, we're there at 70. So instead of someone being taught a trade or learned something, they didn't. You know, tomorrow we will celebrate 80 years since the bombing of Pearl Harbor.
Today, December 7th.
Today, yes.
Yes.
And the crazy thing about that is, as bad as that war was, it taught a lot of people a lot of skills. We had guys who became machinists, electricians, you name it. They worked in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, and 80s. You know, we had a GI Bill, which was free college, which allowed us to go to the moon because those guys were trained as scientists, lawyers, doctors, engineers, you name it. We don't have that now. And as I'm talking about it, we probably need a new GI Bill for kids and some young people. You know, had an argument recently about free college. We shouldn't have it. We did have free college. It was called the GI Bill. And for every dollar we spent, we got probably 11 bucks back in return.
You have always said this to me, that we're worth the investment. So I'd like to go back to your own childhood. Would you tell me a little bit about who your parents were and where you were born, and then a little bit about your ancestors before that?
Oh, wow. Yipes. You humble me. My parents were the youngest in their families, the youngest son and daughter. They were married almost 14 years before I was born, and I have one sister. They were living in Mississippi on a plantation when they were married. They worked for an entire year and were in the hole and owed money. And my father would tell me the story, as well as my mother, that at the end of that year, my father said to my mother that if we do not leave this place now, we will never get out of here. So he said, I packed up all we had, your mother and I, on a wagon with two mules, and we left that plantation. Those were my parents, not my grandparents.
And they were sharecroppers.
They
Would
were sharecroppers.
You describe what is a sharecropper?
Sharecropping is a form of peonage, or slavery by another name. You lived on this plantation. You were given a plot of land. Often the seed, the fertilizer, even the mules or what have you. Or you would go to what was called the company store, which was located on the plantation. They kept the books. They sold the cotton. And they told you what you earned at the end of the year. And so many people were just, it was a sophisticated form of cheating. And if you questioned it, you could be in great trouble. And a lot of people did.
And so cotton was grown on that plantation.
Cotton was grown. It was king. Mississippi Delta, cotton was king.
And so then they moved to a town named Greenville.
Where I was born, Greenville, Mississippi. Some people may know of it because of Harding Carter, no relation to Jimmy Carter. Pulitzer Prize winning newspaperman. Similar to the day, and he was quite a guy. He actually was somewhat liberal for the time, and there's a story that his office was on the second floor of this building, and he was on his way out to lunch, and he's coming down the stairs, and he looks down the stairs, and there are two men on the way up with guns drawn to kill him. And he had moved originally from Louisiana, where he had been causing problems, I think, for Huey P. Long. So he had a noted history of being a rabble-rouser. And I grew up during the height of the Civil Rights Movement. And it was quite interesting. And it took me years to find out that everyone didn't have the childhood I did. Most of the icons of the Civil Rights Movement I had a chance to meet. Some were family friends. My stepfather's best friend was Megra Evers. Fannie Lou Hamer, met her. I went to law school and actually got a chance to do cases. I knew all the parties in con law.
So this has been my privilege and the privilege of the people of New London and our area to learn this history from you, because you can touch the history. Tell me about your great-grandparents.
My grandparents, I know. They were alive. My father's mother and father married November 8, 1896, and I knew them personally. And unbelievable people. My father had one uncle who was named Gray Cooper. He had been a slave, and large plantations had blacksmiths that they would rent out to other plantations. When freedom came, he, as he got older, he could no longer take care of himself, and they didn't want him to live alone. So he moved to my grandparents, and my father would talk about him living behind my grandparents' house in a lean-to, cooking his meals on an open fire. And he had all of his tools. And when my grandfather died, my father got the tools. And when my father died, I got his tools. So I still have the emblem, what have you, of a blacksmith who was actually a slave. And my mother's grandmother, she died in 1946, 2 years before I was born. And I have cousins, my first cousins, who are in their 80s and 90s, were babysat by her. And she got her freedom in her 30s. So slavery isn't that long ago, because if I had been born 2 years before, she probably would have held me.
So let's fast forward, Lonnie, to November 2008, when I had the really incredible privilege of sitting with you and watching the election returns and watching President Obama win the election. And here was our first black president. What you said to me that day, you said, "America has risen." And that's what I started off my story with for the next morning's paper. But you also said to me, this isn't going to be easy, and this isn't the end. Could you tell us how you knew that, and what has come to pass since?
Well, I'm a voracious reader, and I love history. And if you understand history, you knew all the signs were there. If you are familiar with Reconstruction, you know. America's a great place. It is a place that I think is the absolute best, but it too needs work. And we have been watching people lose what they thought was their and their birthright. In 1980, 1% of the American population had 9% of the wealth. When George Bush Jr. left, 1% of the American population had 24.8 or 9% of the wealth. As you enlarge your piece of the pie, what happens to everyone else's piece? And if you are not clear in your understanding of what is happening and someone says, "Oh, look, they are the reason," or "That's the reason," it's easy to follow that dog whistle. And that's one of the things I saw coming. And it was going to be like a new reconstruction. And it, unfortunately, all too often, it has panned out to be that.
And when you came in this morning, you said that actually you wanted to convey, though, a message of hope.
Well, without hope, what do we have? And we have to have hope. Because at the end of the day, we should look at, I look at New London and America as a boat, and we're all in it. So if there's a hole in the boat, it's not, you know, the Titanic didn't just go down and leave the first class passengers afloat. America's the same way. When we look at children, if you know anything about farming, a farmer, the last thing he or she would do would eat the seed corn. And when we foul up kids and don't look after them, we're eating our seed corn. And if we're not looking far down into the future, we're eating our seed corn. China has 1.5 billion people. India has about 1.2, 1.3 billion. America has about 330 million. So when you're looking at almost 10 times the number, and most of the people there were who are running things were educated in the West, they know an awful lot about us. So America needs to be preparing for tomorrow, not yesterday, because tomorrow is here, and the future is fast approaching. And we need to be able to participate in it on an equal footing, not argue about someone stealing this or that. And when I look at how things are working, actually look at the patent office and see who is getting the patents and where they are coming from. At one time, the patents were all us. Now what we look at are acquisitions. How can I buy up this company that's inventing something, what have you, pay whatever money and just charge my customer? We're in the other parts of the world right now where they're figuring out how to invent things. You know, there are two rovers on Mars. One of them does not belong to us. There are two space stations in space right now. One of them we're not on. And the Russians weren't able to ever get successfully a rover on Mars.
What is the way forward?
Way forward? A lot of bridge building. A lot of bridge building. We have to actually now start to think about how we can behave in a fashion that we can allow the person who does not necessarily agree with us, look like us, or think like us, to actually have an opportunity to be heard. The things we say to each other and some of the most despicable ways we're behaving in this country right now are being seen by others. And when we try and say we're the shining city on the hill, some people are in the world are shining a light on it, using it as propaganda. It does not have to be fabricated.
On a personal level, you have always been able to get along with everybody and win their trust and respect. I mean, what's the secret sauce, as they say, to your...
My parents. The reason I don't dwell on crazy, I guess, or getting angry, what have you, they would have a saying, my parents. They would say, like, boy, you got a cup of water. You got weeds and you got plants. Weeds have a way of growing without it. Use your water wisely. So I've always tried to use my water wisely. And if you're always upset and you're always angry, you're also often blind. I like to be able to see.
So what is ahead for you upon your retirement from the state service?
Oh, wow. You know, I have a friend named Richard George who worked over at Millstone when they first started, and he went to work for Bechtel in California. And he's having some health problems now, and I saw him some months ago, and he reminded me that when he was going to California, I had told him when I first came to Connecticut. I've now been in Connecticut. I came 2 days after Thanksgiving, 1968. And he and I met like less than a year later. That I wanted to be an international lawyer and work in China. And Nixon hadn't gone there. And people said, well, China's not open. I said, you got a billion, it was like a billion, two of them. You got all these people, they ever open this country up. It is going to be a place that you can really prosper. Well, I didn't get a chance to be an international lawyer because I found out I wanted to go to Yale. That was kind of out. Didn't have the kind of connections. That was kind of out. Didn't have the money. That was kind of out. So I'm going to try and take myself to Yale for a year just for myself to actually pursue that part of my dream, make that come true. And after that, I hope maybe to teach sixth grade for a couple of years. And, you know, we go into a school, you see the principal, all too often the male, none of the teachers. And I think that we need to give the kids a total look at everybody. And I'm hoping that someone looks at me and says, you know, I'm smarter than that guy. I can be a teacher, too.
Well, I guess there's no golf course or no sitting by the pool or any of that in near future.
Yeah. You know, I've been a woodworker for a long time, so I got a wood shop, so I'll make some furniture. And I raise citrus, and I raise bananas. And I have a greenhouse, so I'll sit in there.
And you fix cars.
Yeah, and I work on cars. And my kid and I restore Miatas.
And you collect Black history memorabilia.
Oh, yes. And I help to make sure that Amazon stock continues to rise because my wife claims that if I die, Amazon's going out of business because of the number of books I buy. But knowledge is power.
Thank you. And I bet I have a couple of books that you loaned me that I haven't returned to you.
We'll get them
back. I'm gonna go through my collection.
Okay.
All right. I think we're running out of time here, but is there anything else that you'd like to say?
Yes. Thank you, New London, for the hand that you gave me. You know, it has been a great time, a great life, and the opportunity you provided me, I will forever appreciate. Love the place.
Best of luck. We love you, Lonnie.
Thank you. Take care. Merry Christmas.